You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bareback Facts. Apologize for having a little bit of a technical difficulty there for a moment, but hopefully we'll be able to get through that, and we'll move on from here. Guys, today we're going to be talking about the Legend of Teke Teke. And once we get this issue sorted out, we'll get into that. There we go. Hopefully that's fixed that. Get some background music out of there. Now, apologies, guys, for any technical difficulties we might be having, but talking about the Legend of Teke Teke, this legend is one that's particularly popular, but also a little bit taboo in certain circles to talk about, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Before we get started, I'd like to remind everybody that we do have a call-in number, and you can feel free to call in anytime. The call-in number is 718-508-9883. And again, I hope you guys will call in and talk, but if you decide to do so, just keep it friendly and keep it about what we're talking about. And basically, that's the only real ground rules I really have for calling into my show. It's kind of a free forum for free thinking and a fun time. But we're going to dive right in. Guys, if you're not familiar with the Legend of Teke Teke, it's actually a pretty interesting story in and of itself. There's numerous tellings of the story. But ultimately, to sum it up from one of the most popularized origins of the story, we got to define who Teke Teke is first. Teke Teke is a ghost who appears in a number of urban legends, and they take almost always the same form. It's usually the form of a woman, though there are some versions of this tale in which the ghost is male. The appearance of Teke Teke is normally a woman who has no lower half to her body. She runs about on her arms, creating the distinctive Teke Teke sound from which she gets her name. That sound is the sound of her fingernails as they run across pavement, because supposedly Teke Teke sprints on her bare hands because she's terrifying like that. Ultimately, Teke Teke is depending on the variation of the story, is a vengeful spirit who takes particular delight in chasing down would-be travelers who happen to be out at. But the origin of the original and most popular origin story of Teke Teke is what we're going to talk about first. Now, probably the most popular tale of Teke Teke is the story of a young woman who suffered an assault at the hands of an American military, at the hands of American military personnel following the Second World War. Now, according to this origin story, in the years after the Second World War, an office worker in Muroran, Hokkaido, was assaulted and later sexually assaulted by American military personnel. Now, that night, she was so grief-stricken and so in such bad shape. And this is where a lot of different variations of the story kind of take off. But in this particular origin story, she leaps off a bridge onto the railroad tracks and is hit by an oncoming train. And the thought is that she attempted to kill herself because of the shame and because of how much she suffered at the hands of her tormentors. Now, the impact was said to have been so forceful that her body was torn in half at the waist. The severe cold of the Hokkaido night caused her blood vessels to contract and prevented her from bleeding out quickly. So instead, she managed to squirm and wriggle about, looking for help for several minutes. She crawled all the way to a train station and is seen by an attendant, and instead of trying to help her, the station attendant covers her with a plastic tarp. As a consequence, she dies an incredibly slow and agonizing death. Now, according to this telling of the story, 3 days after hearing this story, you will see the ghost of a woman with no lower half. The ghost is that of the woman who was hit by the train. She will try to catch you, and escape is impossible, even in a car. The ghost is said to have been able is said to be able to crawl at speeds of up to 150 kilometers per hour, and some say that she is searching for her legs, which were lost when she was cut in half. Others say that she is angry at the callousness she is shown by humanity and for not helping her, preventing her from dying, and that she's simply out to kill as many people as she possibly can. Now, when she catches you, according to this telling of the story, she will tear you in half and steal the lower half of your body for herself. Now, shortly after hearing this original tale, she will ask you a riddle, either in a dream or in a mysterious phone call. The only way to escape death is to answer her question, do you need your legs? You must reply that I need them right now. Then she will ask you who told you my story, and you must reply, Kashimi Reiko. And Ka is given the kanji for mask. She as in death, Ma as in demon, and Rei as in ghost, as and Ko as in accident. So if you answer her riddles without a mistake, she might let you live. Now, this is only but one variation of the tale. There are other iterations of this story that take a little bit of a darker turn. So in other iterations of the story, Teke Teke is predominantly described as a vengeful spirit who travels on either her hands or the shattered bones of her elbows, dragging her upper torso and making scratching sounds across the ground as she comes after her would-be prey. Now, if she encounters anyone at night and the victim is not fast enough, she will slice them in half at the torso, mimicking her own disfigurement. Now, here's another iteration of the story. In one iteration of the story, a young schoolboy is walking home at night and he spots a beautiful girl standing by a windowsill resting on her elbows. He looks up and smiles at her. He's, oh, you know, she's very pretty. He smiles. And the boy wonders what a girl is doing in an all-boys school, because at the time of this telling of the story, she is at an all-boys academy. Now, before he could wonder too much about it, the girl jumps out of the window, revealing that her lower half is missing, and the boy is frightened. He's frozen in place, but before he can run off, she jumps down with a scythe and slices him in half, and the boy is found dead, but his lower half is missing. And thus, in this iteration of the tale, Teke Teke not only attacks people, but also she leaves them to her fate, and that is to roam the world as a vengeful spirit, searching for the other half of your body. A very similar early urban legend concerns another young girl who never made it home at night. She apparently suffers an accident. She is hit by a car, in a hit and run accident, who does not stop, basically doesn't stop, doesn't care, and as a consequence, she's turned into Teke Teke, and she raises herself up from the grave and stalks people on the streets of Japan at night, looking for people living recklessly. Now, Teke Teke has so many variations to it, but one thing that is common in just about every variation is that Teke Teke is almost always a woman. She's always missing her lower half. And occasionally, and in many stories, she either carries a scythe or a saw and wanders at night searching for victims who are too slow to escape her. Predominantly, she's said to be found haunting train stations. But she's also been known to wait at bus stops, hide around corners on the street, or lie in wait in the trees in a park in the middle of the night. Now, we're going to get into a few other variations and tellings of the story as well. One of the other variations of this story is also particularly interesting. In one telling of the story, Despite, you know, behind the urban legend, one variation says that she was once a very homely Japanese schoolgirl who was notoriously afraid of everything. So she, in this iteration of the story, Teke Teke starts out as a very shy, you know, very modest young schoolgirl. And instead of, and she runs afoul of her classmates. Apparently, her classmates didn't think that she was a good person, that they didn't like her. And instead of befriending her, they decided to torment her despite her opening herself up to them and trying to be nice. They decided to torment her with a series of pranks and practical jokes. And one day after school, they're all waiting by the train station when one of the these original pranksters caught a low-flying cicada and placed it on the girl's shoulder. Unfortunately, the rumbling of the oncoming train masked the screeching of the cicada, so it took a long time before the girl noticed it. When she did, she flailed about in a desperate attempt to get rid of the angry insect and tripped onto the tracks and is cut in half promptly by the oncoming train. In another version, the Teke Teke is the ghost of a beautiful young woman who was brutally assaulted by a group of men in a cornfield. In some versions, the woman was left dragging her lifeless body around until she finally reached someone who she thought would help her. While in others, the woman out of shame commits suicide by hurling herself in front of an oncoming train or vehicle. Now, in both versions of this story, in both of these versions of the story, the protagonist of the story, the young woman, rises again as a vengeful spirit, or Onryo, and mutilates others, forcing them to share her fate. Now, in some cases, people who are cut in half by the Teke Teke, as I mentioned before, will themselves become Teke Teke, which, if nothing else, will certainly save you money on clothes shopping, right? Because you're only going to have to buy shirts. It's going to be great. The Teke Teke has also become synonymous with this other urban legend, which I already mentioned earlier, was the legend of Kashima Reiko. The young woman who's assaulted by a group of men and left for dead in a bathroom or passed out on some train tracks or who threw herself in a train. There's these multiple tellings. Either way, somehow Kashima Reiko somehow loses her legs in an accident involving a train or other oncoming vehicle. And instead of visiting, you know, making it to help, people either spurned her, didn't find her, or simply let her die. And as a consequence, she rises from the grave incredibly angry. Nobody took the time to help her out, and that she ended up being the victim of a crime in the first place. Because of this, problem, not only is Teke Teke an angry, vengeful spirit because in these various iterations people have wronged her, but she's also angry at the inaction of people. The lesson here that we learn from the story of Teke Teke isn't just not to be cruel. It's the fact that people not only allowed this to happen, but they also didn't do anything to help her in her time of need. Now, this original telling that we have, Teke Teke, the original story that I told of Kashima Reiko being assaulted and left for dead, pretty much pins her down as being tied to train stations. She doesn't really go anywhere else. She's just kind of at train stations or at bus stations for the most part. But these other iterations of the story indicate that Teke Teke can appear anywhere. And sometimes, in some tellings of the story, she has a very bizarre predilection for hiding in public bathroom stalls and waiting for unsuspecting victims to take a seat in that stall so that she can tear their bodies asunder in their most vulnerable state, which is kind of horrifying and makes you really not want to use the public restroom even more than you already probably didn't.
let's get into the appearance of Teke Teke. Teke Teke is universally portrayed as a girl or young woman, usually with long black hair that covers her face. Now, in some instances, her face has been disfigured by the accident that caused her death, but in most portrayals, she looks like a regular girl, from the waist up, that is. The Teke Teke has been severed at the hips, so the top half of her torso is just a bloody stump. Now, many representations imply she has recently sustained the wound, so she is still bleeding profusely and looking. She's often portrayed as having claws instead of fingernails or fingers, as these help her drag herself around. Additionally, occasionally we are seeing that she doesn't have claws or fingers, and rather she runs around on the bones in her hands, skinless fingers that allow her, you know, her skeletal hands are actually dragging her around. It's kind of horrifying. Oddly enough, in spite of being integral to the urban legend, she's rarely portrayed with a scythe or saw, despite the fact that many popular illustrations of her depict her as carrying a scythe and some a saw. Most of the time, she's just portrayed with claws. In several other depictions and tellings of the story, she carries other weapons like a katana or a dagger. But unfortunately, this part of the legend lacks a little bit of consistency. As with many legends, there are various tellings of the story. And as you've seen, there are numerous changes to the story, varying from it being a young schoolgirl, a homely, humble young schoolgirl trying to make friends and ultimately spurned by those around her, ranging from that to a young woman who is violently assaulted and left for dead, and who either commits suicide or fortunately suffers death at the hands of not only the cruelty of her tormentors, but also the misfortune of stumbling in onto a train track. Now, before we continue further and talking about Teke Teke and some more about the legend itself and how it's impacted popular culture, we're going to take a short commercial break. And at this time, I'd like to remind you all that we do have a proud sponsor here at Totally Driven Entertainment. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFreelyPresents.com. Now, when we come back, guys, we're going to delve a little bit deeper into Teke Teke and talk a little bit more about ghosts in Japanese culture in general and what makes Teke Teke so unique in terms of how we outside of Japanese culture might view ghosts versus what Teke Teke is in comparison. So we'll get into that when we come back.
I'm black man, saving man's eye, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mother. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back, everybody, to the show, and I hope you guys enjoyed the commercial break. Now, before the commercial break, I mentioned the fact that we need to talk about the difference between teke-teke and ghosts in the more Western sense. And when I say the more Western sense, I don't want to create this I'm trying to avoid creating a paradigm between this very outdated way of viewing East versus West, but let's just say, for all intents and purposes, ghosts outside of Japanese culture. Because ghosts within Japanese culture are, in my opinion, far more complex than ghosts, say, in British or American or French or German culture. And these are cultures that I'm more have been more exposed to over the years. Their versions of ghosts are spirits who generally have not passed on and in most cases really can't impact the world around them all that much, except for, you know, just appearing as apparitions. Now, occasionally, depending on the story, they might appear and, you know, haunt people, give them advice, be consulted, much like the oracles were claiming to do in Greece. But, all, you know, at least in the context of a more Euro and U.S.-centric version of ghosts, for the most part, by and large, they're not really all that dangerous, at least in most cases. They're not described as being able to impact the world around them in the same way that ghosts within Japanese culture can, because there are so many different varieties of ghosts in Japanese culture, and the difference between them can be quite startling when you start realizing how many variations there are. So within Japanese culture, ghosts and spirits and monsters can be loosely classified under a very large blanket term, yokai. And I've covered yokai on the show before. Their name essentially means bewitching, attractive calamities, or a bewitching specter, an attractive apparition, a mysterious calamity, a suspicious occurrence. These entities can possess attributes ranging from being plant-like, animalistic, possessing human-like and animal-like qualities, possessing only human-like qualities, possessing the qualities of natural phenomena such as abnormal weather patterns that just appear suddenly and then disappear as suddenly. And they can even take on the forms of plants and inanimate objects. So these spirits are far more complicated than the ghosts that you might be more familiar with. For us, ghosts are more along the lines of, you know, paranormal activity, but maybe without demons, but as close as it gets, right? You know, for us, ghosts are the spooky, you know, ghostly Confederate soldier we all heard about when we were a kid, or the ghostly Union soldier looking for his way, lost his way from the battalion, or the ghostly horseman who rides by. But these ghosts are really just, you know, there's, you see something like that, you probably would be scared, you'd be shocked, you'd be startled. But if you saw Teke Teke, you wouldn't just be scared and startled, you'd be shitting your pants. Because this is not just a ghost, it's a malevolent entity whose sole purpose is to rend you in half because it's a vengeful spirit. And that's not to say that vengeful spirits don't exist within cultures outside of Japan, because they certainly do, and in abundance. But what separates Teke Teke from ghosts in other cultures is that Teke Teke is not only a malevolent spirit, Teke Teke is in a complex position, because while Teke Teke is often described as being a ghost, it is also often described as having a body that appears to be still alive, an entity that is still bleeding but should have long been dead, an entity that can physically interact with the world around it. Now, in a less Japanese-centric view, in a more Americanized view of ghosts, for us, ghosts don't really interact with the world around them. They might, you know, you might hear a spooky sound, or they might clatter pots and pans in your house, but that's really about the extent of what you deal with. And then you get into, and probably what I would say, at least in the context of what we've seen in American cinema and literature, particularly over the last, you know, 50 or so years as in regards to cinema, is that demons are predominantly what we would view to be the scary spirits that do damage to the world around them, that, you know, can torment you and hurt you and otherwise be dangerous. Whereas ghosts, we kind of think of them as sort of like, oh, look, it's, you know, just proof of the afterlife, and you know, even though there's some shock value when it comes to ghost stories here in the States, and there's definitely some tales that are more gruesome than others that can be scary or you know, otherwise unsettling, but predominantly by and large, when it comes to ghosts, at least in the American context, ghosts are nothing like Teke Teke. We don't have really anything like her that is a ghost. And there is a reason for that. This is because Teke Teke can take on very humanistic qualities despite being dead. You know, she's in a very odd place because she, in some descriptions, is both alive and dead. So, you know, that's kind of complicated. How is one alive and dead at the same time? You know, for people in Japan, this, you know, is not really, you know, all that difficult for them. They have even stories of living ghosts, which you ask yourself what a living ghost is, but they have stories about ghosts that can actually eat. Ghosts that have passed from the world of the living, but are still engaging in activities that only living people should be able to engage in, right? The ability to take physical objects into oneself, digest them and move on, is something that living beings do. We eat while we're alive. But in Japanese culture, ghosts can eat. They can do this thing. They can, if they want to go out and get a Big Mac, they can. Because screw the rules. We're Japanese ghosts. We do what we want. And that's what I think, one of the major things I think that's important to make this distinction, that Teke Teke is not just a ghost, at least in the sense that we would view a ghost, because Teke Teke is more than that. She is a vengeful spirit, but she also possesses the qualities of a living person. You know, there are multiple variations of Dory in which she is not only, you know, can not only appear quite suddenly from out of nowhere and attack people, but she looks to possess an actual corporal form. And what do I mean by corporeal form? It means she still possesses some sort of physical, actual, solid body that she can attack you with. And I think that's what makes Teke Teke so fascinating, is because she is supposed to be a ghost, and yet she possesses a physical form that she can interact with you and the world around her with. And this is in many of the tellings. Of course, there are other tellings in which she shows up as a screeching, wailing ghost that runs across the ground on her hands and then vanishes at the last second, you know, scaring the absolute shit out of the person who saw it, which, to be fair, you probably would be a little freaked out about that. But Teke Teke is so fascinating because of all the, not because of the fact that it's a vengeful spirit and it's got such tragic origin stories surrounding it, and that it's been told so many different times and has been around for so long, but because Teke Teke possesses these contradictions within itself, that it's a ghost, but it has a body, it's supposedly dead, but it's also not dead, ability to physically interact with the world around it, and yet it shouldn't have that ability, really, because it's not... It's kind of in a hazy ground where it both doesn't and does have a physical form. So Teke Teke is a haunting contradiction because it can exist in multiple planes of existence at the same time, which I think is quite fascinating in and of itself. It makes Teke Teke a more complicated monster, if you will, than we are perhaps accustomed to. In many cases. So we've looked at Teke Teke from the standpoint of defining Teke Teke as to what it is and what it isn't. But now let's take a look at some of the impact that Teke Teke has had on popular culture, because Teke Teke has in fact had an impact on popular culture. Teke was actually recently the subject of a film in 2009 called Teke Teke. It was released in March of 2009. And believe it or not, it actually is not rated very poorly. It's gotten a pretty good score with IMDb and Metacritic. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's fairly impressive that this movie could do so well. But Teke Teke follows the urban legend of the young girl who is killed in a gruesome way and comes back for vengeance. And it follows a young girl who learns of not only the urban legend of Teke Teke after her friend is killed in a gruesome way, the legend is told through a female ghost who has no legs and all the characters who come in contact with her throughout the film. So Teke Teke has made her mark, so to speak, in popular culture. In addition, Teke Teke has also appeared in a film by Takashi Fuyusawa's in 2006 called Otashimono. And Otashimono features a variation of the legend. It's a film that it's a horror film released in 2006 in Korea before at first and then in Japan, and its name literally translates to Ghost Train. There's a young man who's told by a mysterious man that he will die after picking up a ticket inside a red bag. While boarding a subway train, he's pulled outside the train, which briefly stops when the conductor is distracted by a figure outside. From there, the story takes off, and we see that a vengeful spirit after him was haunting that train station. In addition, Teke Teke has appeared prominently in various manga. She's also been featured in the first episode of an anime called Ghost Stories. And again, she's made her mark on popular culture in Japan. And I shouldn't have to say it, but I will say it. Japanese films and Japanese literature, particularly anime and manga, have been tremendously influential in the United States for quite a while now. And, you know, I think this is a perfect opportunity to talk about that exchange as well. This, you know, there is such a overwhelmingly large amount of people who are a fan anime and manga and are being exposed to these stories secondhand or thirdhand, and various, and they're getting these various reiterations of the story. And I think that not only is it very interesting that Japanese culture is so popularized over here in the United States, but I also think it's very interesting that there are so many stories that people in Japan are writing about, and so many culturally unique stories that they have, such as The Legend of Teke Teke, that have entertainment value here in the United States, that people here in the United States and Britain, France, Europe, you know, Europe at large. I mean, anime and manga particularly are just huge all over the world, particularly in places like Germany and Denmark and France and the United States and England and other parts of the world as well. I mean, you need only look at these Comic-Cons and, you know, various conventions all over the world with thousands upon thousands of people going to them to see that Japanese culture has had a tremendous impact on the world of entertainment. It has. And you look at the film industry as well, it's had a tremendous on the film industry. When you look at the success of films like The Grudge or Insidious, these films are oftentimes influenced or based off of Japanese films that have already been made, that were incredibly successful in Japan, and now they're being made here and they're incredibly successful. Why are they so successful? Because that stuff is scary, and people find these stories, and maybe they don't understand the origin necessarily, or perhaps even the context or larger implications of these stories all the time. Maybe people in other outside of Japanese culture don't always understand the overarching themes and the overarching metaphors that are inherent within these stories, like the lessons that are trying to be taught, but they find the entertainment value in the story just the same. And I think that shows something very, very amazing about not only the legends that these films are based off of, but it also shows the staying power of a very good story. You look at the story of Teke Teke, it's a relatable enough story no matter which variation of the tale you hear, whether it's about the young schoolgirl or the poor woman that's assaulted and left for dead. These stories are relatable. And we can find ourselves, and also in some cases we can find ourselves empathetic with the subject matter of these stories. And I think that speaks volumes about the staying power of these stories. And when I say staying power, I mean that there are certain themes within legends that we can identify with no matter where we are from in the world. Even if we don't know every single aspect of the legend, there are overarching themes within these legends that we can identify with. For example, one of the major themes in the story of Teke Teke is the theme of vengeance, right? Teke Teke, in many cases, is an onryu. What is an onryu? It is a malevolent, vicious, vengeful spirit. In the traditional beliefs of Japan and in literature, onryu, or vengeful spirits, refer to ghosts capable of causing harm in the world of living, in the world of the living, killing and harming enemies, or even causing natural disasters to exact vengeance to redress the wrongs it received while alive. And occasionally they even take the spirits from other people's dying bodies. Now, vengeance is a theme that we can all identify with. No matter where you are from around the world, revenge is a theme that we have played up in almost every culture around the world. There are so many stories dedicated to the theme of revenge. And why is that? Because I think every person in the world has had somebody wrong them in some way, and there's nothing more gratifying for a person to, besides, you know, actually achieving revenge, than talking or thinking about revenge and how gratifying that feeling would be. So I think that despite the fact that that is kind of a sad way of viewing this story and the overarching theme of revenge, it's no secret that human beings on the whole, and it's not a generalization, people identify with the concept of revenge because people identify with anger and they identify with what it means to be wronged. There's not a single person in the world alive today that could say that every single day of their life has just been splendid and nobody has ever upset them or hurt their feelings or done anything to them warranting revenge. I wouldn't believe it. I just don't see it happening. And so so that's one of the major reasons I think why this story has such staying power. It's because people identify with this concept of revenge. You know, for crying out loud, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say that if, you know, somebody killed them, they would haunt them for the rest of their days, or, you know, things like that. People can identify with vengeance as a theme because it encompasses the passions that can exist within the human spirit, right? You know, anger is something that everybody can identify with. Everybody's been angry at least one time in their life. And so we can identify with that anger, that need for recompense. You know, everybody has had to deal with some hardship in their life. And oftentimes it's the result of the people around us or, you know, and in many cases our own choices, but it's oftentimes the results of circumstances outside of our control that are in control of other people. And so we can identify with revenge. So that's just one of the themes that we can identify with Teke Teke that makes this story have some staying power. Another one of the themes is tragedy. We can identify with tragedy. You look at the work of William Shakespeare. He wrote numerous tragedies, and we won't get into the controversies around whether or not, you know, about William Shakespeare. That we'll save that for another time. But you look at the works of Shakespeare. He wrote numerous tragedies, and people loved the stories because they identified with the characters. They identified with their plight, with their difficulties, right? The challenges that they faced. People identify with these challenges. They identify with these tragedies. We have that feeling of empathy within us where we can see another person suffering and we can say, wow, I feel bad for that person, or I feel that I have felt this way before. I have experienced the harsh reality of what it means to suffer. And so I, in my own experience, can identify with this story. Now, maybe not all of us have been assaulted brutally and left for dead, and one would hope not, otherwise you probably wouldn't be listening to today's show, not to make light of it, but, you know, it is what it is in this scenario. But person, even if that didn't happen to us, because we can try to put ourselves in that person's shoes. And when we put ourselves in somebody else's shoes and we think about their experience, suddenly we have that overwhelming feeling of empathy. We have that feeling of sympathy and remorse for what that person suffered. Even if we didn't inflict the pain on the person, I think by and large, there are many people around that have listened to my show, that are listening to my show now, that can agree that when you see somebody suffer or when you hear something terrible and tragic happening, you feel bad. You're like, oh my gosh, how could that happen? How could something so terrible happen to a person? And so I think that's yet another theme within the legend of Teke Teke that gives it so much staying power and that makes a cultural crossover so easy. For this story, because here we have two very common themes, tragedy and vengeance. These are themes that are used all over the world in stories all over the world. People can identify with that. They can get on board with that. They are entertained by that. They are interested by that. They can relate to that because they're human. And they have experienced the desire for revenge. And they have experienced tragedy, whether in their own life or vicariously through another person that they know. So they have experienced tragedy. They have experienced loss. And here's another thing that many people might be able to relate to within this story, and that is that social taboo, the social taboos, right? Why do we create scary stories? Right? We've talked about this before on the show. What other purpose could the story of Teke Teke serve other than to encompass themes of revenge and tragedy and, you know, just to be entertaining and scary? But most of the time, these stories have some overarching themes in them that we can take away, but also they have some lesson that we can learn from them. So what sorts of lessons can we learn from the story of Teke Teke? Well, before we get directly into what sort of lessons we can learn, I do want to double back for a second, because I do want to explore a little bit more this other theme that exists that we can relate to with the story of Teke Teke. And that story would be, or that theme would be suffering, right? Suffering. In every variation of this story that I've shared with you guys today, the protagonist of the story suffers, whether it's at the hands of their friends, whether it's at the hands of a stranger, they suffer. And not only do they suffer cruelty, but they suffer from another very, very important thing that's going to tie into this as well, and that is isolation. If you think about the story of Teke Teke, every single reiteration of the story that I've shared with you guys today has had these two things in it as well. They've had this concept of suffering, both, you know, whether or not it was the young girl who was tormented and fell in front of the oncoming train because of her classmates tormenting her, or the young woman who was assaulted and decided to either hurl herself in front of a train, or in some tellings of the story is thrown in front of a train. In both versions of that, in every iteration of those stories, the person suffered. They were tormented by people while they were alive. In addition to that, they were isolated. And despite the fact that they were around people, nobody attempted to intervene on their behalf. They were isolated away from the people that cared, away from safety. They were left in isolation to fend for themselves. They became they were preyed upon by people because they were isolated, because they were on their own, because they were alone. So what can we take away from that? Well, before we take away from it, one thing we can definitely do is relate to it. And how can we relate to this concept of suffering and this concept of isolation, whether it's self-imposed or socially imposed upon us, the isolation? I think it's safe to say that everybody at one point in time has felt alone in their life. Even if they've been around a lot of people, there's always that one moment you have, right? The one moment you have in your day of your life where you feel lonely, right? I think everybody has experienced that. And so this is totally relatable, but you feel isolated. You feel vulnerable. And when you're alone, when you're on your own, it can be exciting. There can be an adventurous tone towards being alone and being out on your own. There is that. But when you're alone in a strange place, like when you're traveling, or when you're alone in an area unfamiliar to you, or when you're alone at night in an area unfamiliar to you, you feel more isolated, don't you? You feel a little bit more vulnerable. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not, you know, you're a big guy. You feel like you're more on edge when you're on your own, right? When you're not around people that you know and trust, you feel like you're on your own. And in some cases, you can feel liberated. But in other cases, when you're on your own, the realization sets in that if something happens, you'd have to handle it all by yourself, right? So we can all relate to that uneasy feeling of being alone and isolated and being vulnerable because of it. But what we can also relate to is suffering. And while these people are suffering before they become teke-tekes, in many cases, you know, in some of the variations, obviously, the suffering is a little bit more extreme than others. But we can all, as human beings, identify with the concept of suffering because we've all suffered something. You know, you've suffered insults. You've suffered, in some cases, beatings or various other forms of assault. You've suffered from maladies, right? You know, health problems. You've suffered from something. Nobody's life, I would say, is probably perfect. And those of us that see people's lives and think that they're perfect probably aren't seeing the entire picture anyway. But suffering is part of life, right? It's a part of life. There's going to be moments in your life where you're not happy and you're gonna suffer. You're going to struggle. And we can identify with these things. And I think these two themes of isolation and suffering tie right up there with the themes of vengeance and the theme of, sorry guys, I lost my train of thought there, but they tie right into these themes that we've been talking about, vengeance, you know, suffering, anger, they tie right into these things because they're very human things. And of course, tragedy, there we go, I got back on there, I knew I'd get it back. But we can relate to these things because we've experienced these things either through our own lives or we've seen other people experience them. And so because we've seen these things, that keeps these stories alive. People often wonder, how do legends last so long? Why are there some stories that we keep telling over and over again? The night before, in a previous episode when I talked about the story of the Iliad and Troy and the famous heroes in that and why they've been around for so long, Why do we still talk about these stories? I mean, these stories are hundreds of years old, sometimes thousands of years old, and why are they even relevant? Who cares about this story, and why would we care about it? But it's because of the fact that there is a value in the story. Maybe in some cases the lessons of the story don't always have the same value that they had when the stories were around initially. Maybe some of the values put forth in these legends and tales that we talk about sometimes are not necessarily applicable today, but there are still those nuggets in these stories that we can get, that we can learn from, that we can identify with. Because at the end of the day, these stories are told by people and they're told about people. And that's always going to make it possible for us to relate to them. But in addition, the more themes we can encompass within these stories and the stronger the themes are, the longer these stories are going to get told and the greater the staying power the story has. And in many cases, you know, stories about love or revenge or tragedies tend to be the stories that have the most staying power. And it's because those are the things that not only entertain us and gratify us on an emotional level and mental level, but they also challenge us to look at those things within our own lives. And so while you look at the story of Teke Teke as a scary story, keep in mind that there are these other themes within the story that you can still identify with, even if you don't care about a ghost story like Teke Teke, you know, this spooky urban legend. There's still a value in the story, and that value is not only entertainment value, because these stories remind us of a very important fact. And that fact is that no matter where we are in the world, we can still identify with people no matter where they're from, because we still have the same, we still experience some of the same things in our lives. And that's what I think is so great about these stories that we keep telling ourselves about ourselves. That's what's so great about how these stories stick around, whether they're scary stories, whether they're heroic stories or not. That's what's great about these stories. It's not the story itself. It's not the fact that the stories are often entertaining. It's the fact that they demonstrate just how much we have in common with one another. No matter where we are in the world, we can still find some common ground by what we value and what's important. That's one of the key elements of today's show that I wanted to talk about. What is important to us? Why do we tell these stories? Is it just for the entertainment, or are we telling our, or are we trying to get at something greater? And I think ultimately, sometimes subconsciously, we as a society are trying to get to the greater meaning of things, whether we realize it or not. And maybe that's not true in every single film or piece of literature that we write and put together. You know, there are some things that are just great entertainment value. You're probably not going to learn a valuable lesson from every single thing that's entertained you or every single thing you expose yourself to that people find entertaining or find interesting. But there's always going to be these stories that that we can connect with. And these stories not only help us connect to the story by how they're told and because of the themes within them, but they help us connect with other people on a whole nother level. Because once we realize that the people telling these stories have had the same experiences we've had, maybe we start to realize that we're not so different from one another, right? We've got a lot more in common than we think we do, because we find things we find entertainment in a lot of the same things, but we also find value in a lot of the same things. And one of the great things we find value in is experience. Experience. And the great journey of life that we're all on together, we're all on this journey together. And these stories remind us of that, resurrecting these themes that are so strong and easily identifiable for us as people, to put ourselves in these stories. So the more commonly used themes such as revenge and tragedy and romance and love and, you know, anger or hatred, and these strong emotionally driven themes help us connect not only with the audience that the story is being told to, but also to one another, because these things make up the very essence of what it means to be human. We're all sharing a collected human experience. All of us as people are going to share similar experiences no matter where we are on our journey in life. We're all going to experience very similar experiences. We're all going to have very similar things happen to us in life. And that's not to say that bad things are going to happen to every single person, or we're all going to experience a terrible thing. We're all going to get cut in half. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you can still identify with some of these emotions and some of these ideas that are being pushed forward in these stories, because there's going to be moments in your life where you suffer. There's going to be moments in your life where you love somebody. There's going to be moments in your life where you just want to choke somebody, you know. There are going to be moments in your life where you get angry or you get sad. And these stories show us what we value, what's important to us. And what is important to us is sharing the experience. So before we continue on and wrap things up, we're going to take another commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to take a look again. We're going to look a little bit more into how teke-teke has been used in more modern context within Japan and abroad. And then we're going to wrap up the show today. So enjoy the commercial break, guys. And when we come back, we're going to go explore that together.
I'm black man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mother. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And before the break, I want to talk a little bit more about the more modernized version of Teke Teke, right? We talked a little bit about the films, the first one, the sequel that took place, I Could Take It To. We talked about Ghost Train and some of the appearances in anime. And there is some staying power here for Teke Teke. It's a story that's been told, you know, orally for quite some time. It ends up in film. It ends up in literature. And now it's even ended up to be quite popular on the internet. It's become part of the creepypasta culture. And I don't know how familiar you guys are with creepypasta, but I'm going to go ahead and define it for you guys and tell you a little bit about what creepypasta are. They're kind of a very popular way of telling stories on the internet. And they, too, have had some rather odd impacts on popular culture. So creepypastas are horror-related legends or images that have been copied and pasted around the internet. And these internet entries are often brief, user-generated paranormal stories intended to scare the readers. They include gruesome tales of murder, suicide, and otherworldly occurrences. According to a study in Time magazine, the genre had its peak audience in 2010 when it was covered in the New York Times. In mainstream media, creepypastas relating to the fictitious Slender Man character came to public attention after the 2014 Slender Man stabbing, in which a 12-year-old girl in Wisconsin was stabbed by two of her friends. The perpetrators claimed that they wanted to prove the Slender Man skeptics wrong. After the murder attempt, some creepypasta website administrators made statements reminding readers of the line between fiction and reality. There are numerous creepypasta characters that have achieved widespread fame and internet along the internet. Among them include characters such as Jeff the Killer, Ted the Caver, and even as well as Slender Man, and now even Teke Teke has been incorporated into the world of creepypastas. And this is, of course, as of as a story on its own on a official site. The website creepypasta.com, which is a collection of creepypastas that have been essentially categorized and put forth and edited on this website, although they are all over the internet. You needn't look very far typing in a creepypasta. You will start finding not only this website, but all kinds of stuff, which I found incredibly fascinating. But these stories are even rated based on some of the websites they're on. And as of 2013, there was even a creepypasta. There were a couple of creepypasta entries online on this website, on Teke Teke. And of course, since then there have been many additions to it on this. And as of 2015, there was even an announced plans for a live-action web series curated by Clive Barker titled Clive Barker's Creepypasta. Now, I didn't actually really look into whether or not Clive Barker actually ended up doing this, but there are numerous creepypastas revolved around video games and urban legends and myths from all around the world, and I just thought it was fascinating that Teke Teke, which some people might not have even heard of before, made such a splash with all these other stories, particularly the fact that stories such as Slender Man and Jeff the Killer, which have become rather notorious on the internet for the actions of people who took the stories a little too seriously. So I think ultimately what we can take away from the story of Teke Teke is that it's yet again another example of a story or legend that took on a life of its own, that perhaps was told as a warning to kids to be home on time. After all, in many iterations of the tale, Teke Teke only attacks people when they're out at night on their own. So what better way to get your kid home on time than to say, if you're not home by X time, Teke Teke will get you. And, you know, ultimately, I think a lot of these stories, particularly scary stories, revolve around social controls, right? Preventing people from committing social taboos. You need only look at the story of the Wendigo, told by the Algonquin people, to know that scary stories are often told to prevent people from committing social taboos. If you're not familiar with the Wendigo, I also covered it on this show before, and ultimately, the Wendigo is the result of a person who was incredibly greedy while they were alive, but also people can become Wendigo after they die if they consume the flesh of another person. And because cannibalism is a societal taboo in many places and was in particular a taboo amongst the Algonquin tribes of North America, this story encouraged people that no matter how desperate things got, you don't want to do that. Okay? You find other means of survival. We don't stoop to this level. This is the line we do not cross. And so we tell these stories oftentimes to draw the line in the sand. These are the lines in the sand. You don't cross this line. These are the expectations socially, and we're setting the boundaries for you.
another key example of this is the story of El Cibón, told in Venezuela and Chile and a few other places in South America, including Mexico. But El Cibón, the spirit that torments people for, you know, abusing liquor and abusing other people. This, you know, punishing lazy people who don't have their priorities in order, who are a drain on society, who are not working, who are otherwise creating an inconvenience for the rest of the people around them by, you know, not going with societal norms, you know, or not only not going with societal norms, but becoming a real threat to other people in their community based on their behaviors. So these stories often serve as a way of drawing that imaginary line in the sand and saying, this is the line you do not cross. This is the boundary. These are expectations we have. You will not perform these actions, and if you do, these consequences will follow. So in the case of Teke Teke, this story can serve as a warning for multiple social taboos. You know, in the iterations in which we see a young girl being bullied and ultimately she's, you know, thrown in front of an oncoming train and cut in half, we can see that one social taboo that we're talking about is bullying, right? Or not treating people with respect. So you should treat people with decency and respect and dignity, and you don't run the risk of creating this monster, right? If those kids hadn't been tormenting our young protagonist, she wouldn't have been pushed in front of an oncoming train and would still be here, and therefore would not have become the vengeful Teke Teke. And then we look at the other iterations of the young woman who was traveling alone, was cornered by a group of men, assaulted, left for dead, and then ultimately comes back as a vengeful spirit. What taboo can we learn from what can we learn from that? Well, it encourages young people, particularly young women, to not be outside by themselves at night, as sad as it is to have to say that. In many cases, it can prove to be quite dangerous. It's unfortunate that that's the way our society functions. I don't care for it personally, but this story does hit on that societal expectation that if you are out at night and you're a person who can be considered vulnerable and you're by yourself, you've put yourself in a situation where you could be a victim because of someone else's cruelty, where you could, in fact, play into somebody else's hand and be at their mercy. So this story encourages people not to do those things. Do not be out by yourself at night. And then when it comes to the stories of Teke Teke chasing down children in the middle of the night and cutting them in half, well, what does that tell us? It tells us parents don't want their children wandering the streets at night. They want them at home in bed where they're accounted for, where their parents know where they are, so they're not getting into mischief and they're not out by themselves running the risk of being kidnapped by somebody or murdered by somebody. This story serves a purpose, right? It serves a purpose depending on the teller of the story. And I think that the same can be said for nearly any scary story. There is a reason why we tell this story. We've got to keep, and almost every single time, it's to keep control of certain individuals or to impose some restriction on some social taboo or to warn a person to not do things that would be that we might consider to be dangerous, that we might as a society consider to be risky. And so I think that's the big takeaway that we have from this story of Teke Teke, is these are some of the lessons that we can take away from the story. And the overarching impact of Teke Teke is that it is a great scary story. It has tremendous staying power because of many of the themes involved, whether they be tragedy, whether they be the theme of revenge. And ultimately, it does teach us valuable lessons about us as a society, that we still have strides to make towards being a society in which stories like this no longer are deemed necessary because we don't have these threats. So, guys, that's all I've got for you today. If you're interested in learning more about Teke Teke, I would advise
checking out yokai.com, which is a great source for looking at various spirits within Japanese culture. I would certainly also advise that you take a look at what happens next. Contemporary Urban Legends and Popular Culture by Gail DeVos, Ghost of Japan short stories, a collection by Yuri Q, and Michael Jones's Folklorist: An Introduction, printed by the Indiana University Press. You might also enjoy taking a look at John Barra, Directory of World Cinema, Japan, Volume 2. And finally, if you're just interested in checking out yokai, there are numerous books on the subject. I would recommend also, again, that you take a look at the website that I mentioned on yokai. But you can look at R. Balaster's Fables of the East, Kwaiden Stories and Studies of Strange Things by L. Hearn, An Introduction to Yokai Culture, Monsters, Ghosts, and Outsiders in Japanese History by K. Komatsu. And I would also recommend you take a look at Japanese Tales by R. Tyler. These are great sources for taking a look at Japanese culture and stories involving yokai and spirits and ghosts, and getting a feel for how Japanese people and how they view the supernatural world and how they have constructed their own ways of viewing life and death and the afterlife, as well as the function of spirits and the function of monsters, and getting a better understanding for the stories they tell and why they tell them. So, guys, that's all I've got for you today. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I do apologize again early on for the technical difficulties. Sometimes my system can be a little bit finicky, but I want to wish you all well in the upcoming holiday, whether you're celebrating or not, next week, 4th of July. So it's going to be a great. Hopefully we all get great weather, and I hope you all enjoy your holiday and enjoy time with your families. In addition to that, guys, I want to announce that there will not be an episode next week because of the holiday, and I know you guys will understand, but we will be back with more myths and more monsters, and hopefully next time we won't have any technical difficulties, you know, knock on wood, you know, you never know. But I hope you guys enjoyed this telling of Teke Teke. I hope you guys learned a lot, and I hope you guys found a way to relate to these different stories and took away a great lesson from today, and that is that no matter where we are in the world, we're still human beings, and we have a lot in common with one another. No matter what people on TV and the talking heads out there, whether they be politicians or people in their nice little cushy newsrooms, tell us about the rest of the world, we need only look at the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, the great myths and legends and inspirational tales that we've told ourselves over the many centuries, to realize that we're all on the same page. Whether we really know it or not, we're all people. And despite our differences, we still share a lot of the same values, and we still have a lot of the same hopes and dreams, and some of the same things inspire us to do great things. So, guys, I'll see you all after the holidays with another episode of the Bareback Facts. Enjoy the rest of your week, guys, and enjoy the holiday.